is in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in the United States. We stand with you.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring, ring with the harmonies of let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the facing the rising sun of a new day begun, let us march on till victory.
Ingum Oladamare Jinyami Olarun God Jehovah Allah Amen Ra, the many names for the original ancestor, the ancestor who sees all and knows all, the creator of the heavens and the earth. We do not pour libation to you, but this morning we come pouring libation in memory and honor of our ancestors and asking them to intercede with you on our behalf. We know that our ancestors, being in the spirit world, are closer to you, and there's a greater opportunity that our requests will be granted. We ask this morning that you grant the listeners the willingness to open their hearts and their minds to the information that's going to be shared, such that they will hear the truth and then be able to act on the truth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors from Mother Africa, the ancestors who were the beginning of the human family that we now have, no matter what your ethnic or cultural background is, the beginning of human life as we know it was on the African continent. Every person on the face of the earth as their original ancestor, an African. We ask those Africans who were the first to conceive of a family, the first to plant a seed, the first to till the land, the first to domesticate animals, the first to navigate the mighty Nile River to Egypt, the first to build a skyscraper, the first to do surgeries, the first to explore the wonders of the galaxy, and as importantly, the first to conceive of the belief in one God. We ask those ancestors to come and be with us today to bring their wisdom, their hard work, their ingenuity to all that we do. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors who were murdered, displaced, diminished during our great Holocaust, our great Miafa, we do not forget you. We remember your unwilling sacrifice as your bodies are lined the Sahara and the Atlantic Ocean. We remember you and we honor you and we ask that you come and be with us today. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. We ask our ancestors who gave us the great document, the Ma'at, to come. Be with us. Bring your additional sense of honor and integrity as embodied by Ma'at to our discussions and our listings this morning. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To those ancestors from the Caribbean islands, from Brazil, from the southern parts of these United States, who through your unpaid labor laid the groundwork for the civilizations that are enjoyed by billions of people around the world. To those ancestors, we say we do not forget you. We remember your sacrifice, your hard work, and we ask that you come and be with us today to inspire us to also do the work required to correct a world that has gone mad. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And to those ancestors who are yet to be born, those ancestors for whom we do good work, those ancestors to whom we pledge to honorably do righteous work all the time for ourselves, for our families, for our communities, so we can be correct to be able to benefit from the largesse that the Creator has provided for all of us. Ancestors, we pledge ourselves to continue to do work such that when you return, this place will be a better earth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And finally, we'd like to ask you and our audience to think of one of your ancestors, someone who you would like to be with us this morning. On the count of three, ask that ancestor to come and be with us. One, two, three. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation, libation, libation. It is good.
is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History mm-hmm. tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
I know you're asking today, how long will it take? Somebody's asking, how long will prejudice blind the visions of men? I come to say to you this afternoon, however difficult the moment,
yes, sir.
However frustrating the hour, it will not be long.
No,
because truth crushed earth will rise again.
Yes, sir.
How long? Not long.
Yes, sir.
Because no lie can live forever.
Yes, sir.
How long? Not long.
How long? Yes,
because you shall reap what you sow.
Yes, sir.
How long?
How
not long.
How long?
Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne.
Yes,
that scaffold sways the future.
Yes.
Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. How long? Not long. Because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice.
Yes,
how long?
Not long.
Not long. Because mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Yes,
he's trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. He's loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword.
Yes,
his truth is marching on.
Yes,
he has sounded forth the trumpet that shall never call retreat.
Yes,
he is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat.
Yes,
oh, be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. Our God is marching on.
Yes.
Glory, hallelujah.
Yes,
glory, hallelujah.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Fight the powers that be. Fight the power. Check this out, man.
Okay, talk to me about the future of Public Enemy.
Future of Public Enemy, guys.
Hello, my name is Nawanda Chambers, co-host of the Black Reality Think Tank. And I am coming to you with a public service announcement about the COVID-19 blues. Has COVID-19 got you down? Are you unsure of what to do to protect yourself? Stressed out because you do not know how to manage the new challenges that COVID-19 has created? Are you experiencing symptoms? Are you afraid? Do you need help with something else? If you answer yes to any of these questions, contact the crisis line at 1-800-985-5990 or text Talk With Us to 66746. Remember, there is help, and let's stay safe.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my brothers and sisters. Welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. I am your host, William Rogers. Thank you so much. Very beautiful day here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Temperature up in the 80s, sunshiny. And so I hope wherever you are, you had a very pleasant and beautiful day as well. Fight the power as we listen to Public Enemy. I really appreciate Brother Spike and Public Enemy for the work that they did in using that song. It's powerful. But sometimes I don't know. I wonder, I don't think it's power we're fighting. I think it's ignorance and insanity. So fight the insanity and the ignorance. So maybe together that creates power. I don't know. But, anyway, I appreciate the song, Fight the Power. Thank you so much for being with us this evening. As I said, we are here every Tuesday from 7 to 9 on the timeforanawakening.com network, which is a part of the Black Talk Radio Network as well. And we have three other programs that operate on this. We have one on a Thursday evening. They're from 6 to 8. We have two on Saturday from 3 to 5 and from 6 to 8 on Saturday evening. So we're going to talk about them in a minute, let you know what they do and kind of what we are trying to do here at the Black Reality Think Tank. And I definitely, whatever we do, we could not do it if it was not for you, our listening audience, and, our guests. So we really appreciate you and we really appreciate your participation and support. Tonight we're going to talk about the Nazification of America. And actually, that's really a misnomer, but it was a way to get your attention and to get the attention of our public as we posted. Because basically, it's the Nazification of a world, and which is where we are going with that, and where it has been going for a long, long time. But I thought maybe it would be appropriate to talk about that as we all try to grapple with this madness that's going on. I mean, everybody is just, frustrated, you're traumatized, you're angry, but somehow it's not enough to have gotten us to get the bottom line, get your knee off my damn neck. We haven't done that yet, and that pressure's still there. And so I'm going to talk about that tonight. First of all, I'm going to talk about what that is. What is that pressure? What is it called? What is its ideological roots? What is its base? And then we want to talk about its pride. So just kind of a free-for-all tonight. I'm open. We've got our normal community panel that comes on with us. A lot of them are online now, and I really appreciate them and their input. So we'll do that. We'll discuss that. I've got a couple of things else I want to talk to you about in relationship to this subject. and what we are doing and where we are going with that. So again, I really appreciate all of you for being here. I want to remind you that this is a call-in format. This is a call-in format, and we are here. As I said, do that. You can give us a call, and we can either let you ask a question, or you might even just want to make a comment, and you're welcome to do that. And so the number is area code 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And that's for you, our listening audience that's on the internet. You could give us a call at that number, and I'll be more than glad to respond. Okay, but as we get ready to launch into this kind of our discussion, I want to do what we always do. We have to do the ancestral profile, and even in terms of our pre-program, what we call, like, remember years ago in school, they used to call it devotion. Well, you have devotion, so we do that here. Everywhere, the black church has devotion. Everybody has a preliminary routine or ritual that they do to sort of galvanize everybody, galvanize the spirit. So that's what we do here. Sometimes I know some folks say, but that's too long. You need to shorten that up. And my answer to them is right off the bat, I'm not shortening anything up. I'm definitely not taking out the ancestry profile. I'm not going to take out John Henry Clark, and I'm not going to take out libation. So just don't.
Amen.
Yeah, right. So that's, you kind of have to do that, you know. And so we do it, and I do it again, as I said, to galvanize. And then there's a logistical reason that I do it. I do it also to give folks the chance to come online, because our program starts at 7 Central, 8 Eastern. And everybody's not online usually right away. So we'll give you a chance to get on there so you can get your coffee cup together, your teacup, and then be ready to come on and talk with us. And so I give you a little time to obviously do that. So hopefully it's appreciative. If not, if you don't understand it, I'm sorry, but we're going to keep on doing it. And we will continue to do that because we need to have rituals. I had a very good friend who used to, she's still the artistic director for an international dance company here in Milwaukee called Kofi. And so I remember her and I having a discussion once about the fact that black folk have lost our process of rituals. And so it needs to be gathered by us and continued by us. We need to have rituals because it structures us. It puts us together and moves us forward. That's how ancestors did it. They even fought wars using rituals. Go back to the Haitian Revolution and some of those and do some research on that stuff. And you will see what I'm talking about. So anyway, yes, we do. It's a kind of a little lengthy devotion period, but it's okay. We're calling the ancestors to be with us, and I feel them all the time. So today I want to talk about a very dear ancestor very briefly. He may be familiar to some of you, and depends on the age frame. This is a little ahead of the current generation. This is kind of going back to the 60s. But this was a powerful brother, and we just want to acknowledge and call his name into the universe and look at him as a great ancestor. His name was Kuwasi Balogun. Kuwasi Balogun. Brother Balogun was born December 22nd, 1946, and he transitioned December 13th, 1986. He was born Donald Weems, W-E-E-M-S, and he was a Black Panther. He was a member of the Black Liberation Army. He was a member of the New African Anarchists and a defendant in the Panther 21 case in the late 1960s, for which he was ultimately acquitted. He was captured and convicted of other various crimes. He spent most of the 1970s in prison. Balogun escaped from prison several times, going underground and resuming the BLA activity, Black Liberation Army activity. He was finally captured and charged with participating in an armored truck robbery known as the Brinks robbery in 1981. which was held, which happened in West Nyack, New York City, New York State, rather. Sorry. And then on October 20, 1981, an action in which two police officers were killed, Waverly Brown and Edward O'Grady, and a money courier, Peter Page, were killed. They were convicted of murder and other charges, and they were sentenced to the imprisonment for life. He died in prison of something called pneumocystis, which is pneumonia, which is a part of an AIDS-related illness. He transitioned on December 13, 1986, at the age of 39. Balagoon authored several texts which, while in prison, and writings that have become influential among black and other anarchists since first being published and distributed by an anarchist prisoner support network in the 1980s and the 1990s. Kouassi Balogun, good great ancestor, liberation fighter. We've had a lot of those. They didn't begin in the 60s. They began in the 1600s on the board the slave ships. We had revolutionaries who were willing to die than to be subjected to that pain and suffering that our people will endure and our children will endure. And so we give honor to Brother Balogun. Like so many of you, as obviously, you know, it's the frustration that we are experiencing, the trauma that we are taking into our spirits as we deal with all of these atrocities is becoming overwhelming. We've talked about this before on the various programs of the Black Reality Think Tank. We talk about how they build us to a certain point, how they crush us, get to the point where you don't know what to do. And on top of the police shootings, we recently just heard about two black men being lynched somewhere, shootings that we don't know about, the COVID-19, economic devastation that's being attacked at our community based on the COVID-19 crisis and the isolation situation. It's a lot for people to deal with. So we as folk, we have to talk about it. And I know a lot of people are, and I'm happy. I don't think it's an overkill. I think they need to talk. You know, we need to have face time. And I know sometimes it gets to be a little much, but it's okay. You need to talk. We need to express ourselves. We need to let this out into the universe as a ritual to action. But at some point, we got to stop talking and move into action and understand clearer what we are doing through and what is happening to our people. We owe that to that next generation coming behind us. We have to let this be known, what this is happening. And this has been a very, very long war, just like so many of you know that. This has been a very long, we've been fighting this war with Europe and the Arab world since the 1400s. And that's a long time, brothers and sisters, to be in a battlefield. You go back and you look at the history of the world, no battle has lasted that long. And it has been a battle. It's a war. War was declared on Africa. And it has continued to June the 16th, 2020. And I think we need to understand it that way. Now, obviously, you say, it's not a war. I don't hear bombs. You don't have to have bombs dropping. You know, there's all forms of war type. And you know, we've heard the dialogue of the Cold War and stuff like that. You know, we've got a combination of all of that. And you've got to look at it that way. America is not our home. We know that. We are not Americans. It's not in our blood. We are not English, even though we speak an English tongue. English is German. It's a German tongue. And we have been using that tongue ever since we've been here in captivity and a part of the captivity system. But that's not who we are. In our spirits is another type of people. And occasionally we are trying to draw that out, like when we do our libations and we have what rituals we do. We're trying to bring out the African in us. We are trying to erase that European mindset that was created out of captivity. And there's so many examples of that. I think sometimes about a zoo. And when you look at a zoo, you're looking at a group of animals who are definitely not at their home. This is not the home. When you go by a lion's cage, that's not his home. Or you walk by a little pool where turtles are playing, that's not their home. They have been forced through zoology and the principles and teachings of zoology to adapt to that lifestyle and to adapt to the environment in which they're in, which is one of captivity. And one of the key things to forcing a people or animal kingdom to accept their captivity is to get them to the point where they don't realize they're captives. And when you can get them to not feel that they're captives, then you have basically succumbed them to the system. But sometimes it doesn't work. You walk into a lion cage, he see you with meat, he may stand there and look at you for a minute, put it down, but just as you walk out, he might attack you or do some other things that would obviously get back to his more real self. And we experience that. We experience that here. It's a zoo-like effect. It makes us believe that we belong here, that we are supposed to be here, that you are supposed to go to work and work 8-10 hours and make a medial paycheck, pay your bills and your life. This is what you're supposed to do. This is the lifestyle. That's where you've been. And as long as you're in that captive state, you're going to always have the situation that you have, because the captor is going to remind you quite often who's in charge. And a lot of what we are seeing in that mentality is that. Now, one of the other things, let me just say very easily as we prepare to talk a little bit about this Nazism, because this is a part of it. This is not necessarily a whole lot of smart power. This is not what that is. People that are implementing and perpetrating this system have basically done it through trial and error. And they originally did it to themselves first. And they waged war against their own people, their own selves. And then from those practices that they did, they decided to use them on others to conquer the world as they attempt to then, at this point, control the resources. So a lot of the behavior you see, and it doesn't justify doing it, but a lot of the behavior you see was done to each other, to themselves. It was self-inflicted with each other. History tells us that. I mean, specifically, it tells us exactly what was done. That same behavior is now being applied to the world. And so it doesn't necessarily just start with when we were in captivity. They had been doing this for a long time. Even the equipment, the chains and shackles that we saw out of the transatlantic system, these things were made in Europe. These things were created in a foreign land. These things were created with the Moors coming out of Morocco and into Spain and moving across the northern part of Europe. They were using things that had been created to control each other, and they were caught up in it because it was at that point a war culture. Now you can compare and contrast that, you know, with say maybe ancient Africa. Ancient Africa had warfare, but you won't find warfare like you see here. The warfare that we see waging now throughout the world and the warfare that was waged against us was a different nature of warfare. And that requires a whole sit down and discuss part of that. So I'm not going to attempt to do that. But there is a difference. And one of the minimal differences is there becomes a lot of focus on completely 360 degree to capture your enemy. That's leading that behavior. You've got to take your enemy all the way out, mentally, physically, spiritually, economically, politically. Take him out. That's the nature of that war, of the war we saw coming out of the war culture world. You got to take him out. You got to take out his kids. You got to take out his woman, whatever family structure you have. You got to wipe that out. You got to take out who he believes in. and his God. You got to take his tongue for him. Make sure he doesn't talk your talk. And then at that point, you got to infiltrate his bloodline. And once you do that, then you can claim what some call in that war culture total defeat. And we see that. We see that in history. And when it can't be done, when it's difficult to do it, then the alternative method is just wipe the whole damn thing out. Wipe them all out. And we've seen that too. They couldn't stop Japan. Japan was using kamikaze spirituality. They were using their ancient culture and were fighting back like crazy. Even sacrifice. They were sacrificing their lives because they knew they had to fight for their ancestors. So they didn't have a problem running a plane into a ship. They didn't have a problem doing some of the things they did. They were almost unstoppable in terms of their war spirit when they were fighting the West. And so they sat down and said, what are we going to do, man? How are we going to stop these crazy people? And the war powers that be at that time were working on a scientific instrument that would had the potential to wipe them all out. And we know the rest of the story. It didn't wipe them all out, but it did enough damage to back them up for many, many years. They still produced, they still awakened from some of that and moved on. So basically, brothers and sisters, what I'm saying is what we're going through is not new in terms of world domination, control, and power. And so what we have to do is we have to come up with our own system, nobody else's. You can't go into a textbook and read The Art of War on Sun Tzu and say that we'll just go out here and apply that. No, that's not the way it's going to work. It's got to do... And it's got to be rooted in our spirituality. And we all know that. I've heard everybody say that. I've heard all of you say it's got to be rooted in our spirituality. And that's what we have to do. And so the shootings, the lynchings, the killings, the destruction of the black families that we see, our own killing against one another, is a reflection of the captivity system that we've been placed. So that's why I started off with the public enemies fight the power. That's really the power we got to fight is our own power within ourselves, the power that stops us from doing anything, the power that makes us silent, the power that makes us sit and watch stuff happen rather than to make it happen. That's the power I'm talking about. That's the power we need to fear. It's that power that we got to fight. It's not some external power out there, because once you fight that inner power, you can destroy that external power. So right now, we got to fight the inner power, and that's ourselves. We got to not fight each other, not fight ourselves, not get to the point where we don't like ourselves. And so when you don't like yourself, you ain't going to like nobody else. I don't care who it is. You can't do that. So that's why I'm not against a lot of the talk that we are getting now and the rhetoric. And I understand a lot of it's rhetoric. A lot of it doesn't have a plan. But you got to still let it happen. You got to let that spew out. You got to let the FaceTimes and the Zooms and all of these things we see. And everybody's talking about this and everybody's talking about that. That's okay. We need to do that as we release ourselves. There's a quote I just want to kind of read a little bit. And like I said, I'm kind of talking right now, and I'm going to, in a few minutes, I'm going to go to the audience and let's open up and let's talk about this spirit we got. Let's talk about this Nazi mentality that has been a part of that war against us since the 1400s. Nazism didn't start with Hitler. Let me first of all say that. That's not where it is. It maybe started as the name of it, but it was around a long time. And there are many ancestors that have written and tried to tell us that it was been around a very long time. So it doesn't start with Adolf Hitler, but it's just coming back to us now in a way that's strange. And we are seeing it being played out. And it's being played out by people who are ignorant of it. They don't even have a clue of what they're doing. You know, they know they're being destructive. They know that. They know they have hate in their heart and malice in their heart toward the people that are doing it, but they don't understand why they're doing it. You know, they're being manipulated too to do that. But anyway, that's another whole story. There's a quote that goes, and it's really it's a little bit verbose, but it's okay. It has some very powerful meaning to what we are talking about and what we want to talk about today. It says one basic truth can be used as a foundation for a mountain of lies. One basic truth can be used as a foundation for a mountain of lies. And if we dig down deep enough into the mountain of lies and bring out the truth to the point that we set it on top of the mountain of lies, the entire mountain of lies, L-I-E-S, the mountain of lies will crumble under the weight of that one truth. And there is nothing more devastating to a structure of lies than the revelation of the truth upon which the structure of lies was built. Because the shock waves of the revelation of the truth reverberate and continue to reverberate throughout the earth for generations to follow, awakening even those people who had no desire to be awakened to the truth. Delamere DeVeris is the author of that. And when we look around, we are beginning to see that. We are going down into those mountains of lies that they told us. You're ignorant. You don't know anything. You're a beast. You're a gorilla. You know, you're not a part of the human family. You're not this. You're not that. You do this. You do that. You don't think at the level of everybody else. And all of those mountain of lies that they told to our people and were perpetrated against them and forced them to react to it in a destructive way. When you go down in there and dig that truth up and bring it back and you lay it on top of those lies, as this author said, the energy from that truth will begin to vibrate and it'll shake up and it'll begin to make it crumble. And that's what we are seeing in the voices of our people as they explain that pain that they're enduring, as they explain that frustration of picking up the newspaper and see two black men got hung in 2020. There's an energy that comes from that, and it shakes up stuff, and it has a tendency to break it up. No one person can do it. It has to be done with ourselves. Everybody that I see right now that are online, that's what you're doing every day. I see you doing it. And I can see who you are, know who you are. You're shaking up that lie. You're making that mountain of lies reverberate. You're making it crick, and it's going to fall. Maybe not in our lifetime. It's going to take a time for it to shake a little bit. And we've got a variation of age groups that are on the line right now that I can see, plus what is on the internet, who may be on the internet. It depends on where you are in that age group that you might be able to see it. W. Du Bois did not see the work that he did. Marcus Garvey was not able to see some of the principles that he had put in place, but it didn't stop him from doing that. Malcolm left this planet before he got a chance to see what the power of some of the things that we have been able to do in small ways. We hadn't stopped the killing. We didn't move the knee off the neck yet, but it's coming. It's getting ready to move. And so I think the thing is that we've got to do what this quote says, is you got to go down into the mountain of lies and pull that truth out and make it work. All of you have, I guess most of you have heard of a brother, Byron Allen, the one that has that mega news system. It's called the Allen Media Group. Byron Allen, deep brother, had just recently came out of a fight with the giant Comcast, and he won. He was able to get compensation from that lawsuit. Don't know what it was unannounced, but he's been around a while. He's, you know, some people may say he's, you know, he's just a part of the system, whatever, but maybe not. But I'm watching folk like that begin to respond. And last week, on Monday. Monday, yesterday, Byron Allen took out two full-page ads in the Wall Street Journal. And he called it Black America Speaks. America Should Listen. Two full-page ads in the Wall Street Journal. That's Dow Jones. That's Murray. Now, I did some research and looked at how much a full-page ad costs in the Wall Street Journal. And it said that a full-page ad in the Wall Street Journal during the week was $252,000. He took out two of them, which means that it probably cost him about a mil. And what he said, is all his writing. He wrote this. And what he said basically is almost, in a certain sense, equivalent to David Walker's appeal. And you can kind of see where what that might have done to that business world. And he knew what he was doing. And I know some of you might say, well, they ain't gonna do no good. Well, no, that's going into the mountain of lies and pulling out some sort of truth. And the article spoke to 10 different categories. It spoke to 10 categories. The first category it spoke to was a true partnership. And he wasn't saying that he wanted to be true partners with America. That's not what he's saying. He was saying that he has done many attempts to reach out to white Americans because we all live here together to work. And you've been trying, white folks have been coming and calling, saying, well, what can I do? What can I do? So he spoke to that, what a true partnership is. The second point that he spoke to was police reform. He indicated very short, nothing long, just maybe about 10 sentences. Number three, he spoke to justice reform. And he talked about the attorney general and this whole mass incarceration issue. Good points. Number four, believe it or not, he spoke to reparations. And he talked about it basically in a very short paragraph why Africans would do reparations. Number five, he talked about educational reform. And he indicated what he needs to see. And he all did this from an African perspective. And it really does have a sort of a nationalistic wind to it. But, he did make points. Then he talked about economic inclusion. And what that means like, and what economic genocide has been to our people and why it needs to change. Number seven, healthcare reform. He addressed that. Number eight, environmental justice. He talked about that. You know, we are big time victims of that. Remember Detroit and that whole water situation up in Michigan. And then number eight, he spoke to jobs, opportunities, internships, and mentorships. And reaching back and providing much stronger diversity, particularly in industries and businesses where we are major consumers. He spoke to that. And then the 10th one, which was his last one, he said peace. He spoke to peace and what that meant to the African and what it was historically. It's basically the longest one that he did with number 10. And then I want to real briefly read that, and then I'm going to go to the audience. But it's so powerful because this is really what we're talking about. He says, America, you are very quick to call us thugs and tell the world we are not peaceful. Tupac Shakur taught us, when you see thugs, what you really see is the hate you give. When the first slave ships showed up in Jamestown in 1619, we said peace, and you chose slavery. When we peacefully tried to end slavery, you chose the Civil War. Slavery was tried to peacefully build our communities, and you chose to lynch us and bomb us. When we tried to peacefully achieve civil rights, you chose to murder our civil rights leaders. When you peacefully tried to vote, you chose to violently stand in our way. When we put our hands up in peace, you chose to kill us. When we went to church to pray for peace, you chose to execute us. when Colin Kaepernick exercised our First Amendment rights to peacefully take a knee in protest, you chose to punish us and instead took a knee on George Floyd's back for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. When you come to this country, our Native American brothers and sisters said peace, and you chose war, rape, and went on to burn down their villages and steal their land. When our Hispanic brothers and sisters came here seeking a better life, just like your ancestors, they were killed and punished. They said peace, but they chose to tell them in a different way. America, we will never have true peace until America stops protecting, nurturing, and fostering hate groups. The white supremacists, the neo-Nazis, and the KKK are nothing more than terrorists with a long history of violence against us. America must deal with these hate groups appropriately the same way it deals with foreign terrorism, because domestic terrorism is much worse. America, you constantly hit us with the four D's when we share our thoughts. You dismiss us when we express our frustrations. You discredit us when you protect. You demonize us. After you demonize us, you feel self-righteous and you move on to that fourth and inevitable, you destroy us. Even today, we are protecting and protesting to achieve basic civil and human rights. We're talking about murder, and you're talking about looting merchandise. Your buildings will be rebuilt, and your shelves will be restocked, but you can never bring back the lives you have stolen. America, you kill us in the classrooms. You kill us in the boardrooms, and you kill us in the courtrooms, long before you kill us in the streets. America, we have been saying peace for over 400 years, and you choose to suffocate us to where we have to holler, "I can't breathe." Let me be clear. Native Americans want peace. Hispanics want peace. Asians want peace. Muslim Americans want peace. Jewish Americans want peace. And Black Americans want peace. America has been denying us that. We all want the most peace. I'm sharing some of my thoughts for many reasons, mainly because I want America to live up to its fullest potential. My wife and I do not want our children sitting in their living rooms 52 years from now, looking out their windows, watching the National Guard enforcing a curfew simply because we have not achieved one America. Black lives matter, and we must all work together to achieve real systematic change. Peace. Byron Allen, founder, chairman, and CEO of the Allen Media Group Entertainment Situation. Well, I'm sure all of us have a critique of that, whether it may have sense, it might be worthless. He took that out on Monday morning in the Wall Street Journal. Very powerful expose, I think. We each, I'm sure, have our own opinion. And when we come back, I want to open up the line as you talk about that. I'm pretty sure it's on somewhere on the Internet. You can take a look at that. But I didn't know it was there, and I was reading the paper that morning, and I opened up and saw this thread. I said, "Oh, my God." And like I said, I did research. I said, "I want to see how much he paid for this." And it probably cost him $1 million to run this ad. So anyway, it ties into what we're saying here tonight, because it ties into the fact that that is the mentality we fight. We're fighting a mentality that doesn't understand all of this. Even though it cost him and it was brilliantly written, there are people that are going to read it that don't know what the hell he's talking about. They're going to say, "What the hell is wrong with him? He ain't, look at Jay-Z. He's doing good. Look at this one. He's doing, Michael Jordan's great. What is he talking about? You black folk doing real good. Got more money than I do." Those are the kinds of responses you're going to get. And why is that? That's because we're dealing with a country that has had a long history. And see, what we have to understand, that Nazi spirit that Nazi spirit goes further than 1619. You have to go back to England, Spain, the Dutch. You have to go back to those areas and look at that mentality. And that mentality is coming from a different realm. And we definitely very clearly want to make sure that we understand. And that's what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about that historical mentality that was labeled Nazism during the time that Hitler. A caller, 414-839, could you please leave your mic muted, please? Thank you. I appreciate that. So it's still a system that was being practiced at a time in America that had actually a long, long history of that evilness that goes along with that. The evilness where you would take your knee and put it on a human being's neck and squish it until he lost his breath. That's a mentality that a part of that was called that Nazi spirit. The fact that you can walk people into an oven that you know is going to snuff out children, men, women. It takes another mindset for that kind of thing and where that's coming from. Dr. Clark wrote about it. Michael Bradley wrote about it. There are books that talk about that, where it comes from. There are even Europeans that wrote about it. Dr. Clark said they're coming out of an ice box and a cold ice-like spirit. I mean, a physical environment has a tendency to create a cold iced spirit as well. So the environment of which they lived out of the caves of Europe and up in those Caucasoid mountain areas, and when they came down into civilization, they came down with vehemence. Dr. Clark talked about that. He said they were very infantile, but they were cold, hungry, looking for food. They'd kill anybody to get it. And we saw some of that. And then Michael Bradley talked about the Iceman inheritance in his book. He talked about that weather, that environment. And then there's others that have dealt with the psychological and social damage that is. People like Winthrop Jordan, the historian, wrote a book called White Over Black, Racial Attitudes Toward African Americans in a Certain Time Frame. Joel Covell, a psychiatrist, wrote a book called Racism, A Psychohistory. And he talked about the craziness of that. And there have been others, as I said, also that have dealt with how all of that has operated and what has happened. So we've got to be mindful of that mindset. And that's what you were seeing. That's what killed my brother Floyd. That's what shot Martin Luther King. That's what is doing some of the strange behavior. That's who's sitting in the White House. That's the mentality of people like that. That's who that is. They are wreaking havoc through the world. They are fearful of their own domination, of their own, for their own existence. Francis Crest Wilson told us that. They feel they're going to be annihilated eventually. And so there are a lot of reasons for that behavior. And unfortunately, we have to live in it and try to survive it. And so that's why these discussions are clear and understanding what is it that we must do. What do we tell our children? As Brother Allen wrote in the article, he doesn't want 52 years from now see his kids sitting at home watching the same thing again. So what do we do? What do we tell them to make sure that doesn't happen? And that's not an easy response. That's not easy. There's a lot we have to tell them. So, and that's what we want to talk about. We want to be able to talk about that in a way that can be meaningful. Because like all of you, you're working on stuff. You're working on agendas. You're out here doing things. You're speaking. You're projecting your thoughts and ideas. You're looking at how to do some of the things you need to do. So by all means, we need to pull our heads together and kind of look at how to do that. Okay. I'm take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, open up the lines, give you a chance to kind of deal with, you know, what you see and exactly, again, you know, how to make this change that's necessary. What do we tell our children? How do we do that? You know, how do we make that?
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
For My People by Margaret Walker. For my people everywhere, singing their slave songs repeatedly, their dirges and their ditties and their blues and jubilees, praying their prayers nightly to an unknown God, bending their knees humbly to an unseen power. For my people lending their strength to the years, to the gone years and the now years and the maybe years, washing, ironing, cooking, scrubbing, sewing, mending, hoeing, plowing, digging, planting, pruning, patching, dragging along, never gaining, never reaping, never knowing, and never understanding. For my playmates in the clay and dust and sand of Alabama backyards, playing baptizing and preaching and doctor and jail and soldier and school and mama and cooking and playhouse and concert and store and hair and Miss Chumbi and company. For the cramped, bewildered years we went to school to learn to know the reasons why and the answers to and the people who and the places where and the days when. In memory of the bitter hours when we discovered we were black and poor and small and different and nobody cared and nobody wondered and nobody understood. For the boys and girls who grew in spite of these things to be man and woman, to laugh and dance and sing and play and drink their wine and religion and success, to marry their playmates and bear children and then die of consumption and anemia and lynching. For my people thronging 47th Street in Chicago and Lenox Avenue in New York and Rampart Street in New Orleans, lost, disenchanted, dispossessed, and happy people filling the cabarets and taverns and other people's pockets needing bread and shoes and milk and land and money and something, something all our own. For my people walking blindly, spreading joy, losing time, being lazy, sleeping when hungry, shouting when burdened, drinking when hopeless, tied and shackled and tangled among ourselves by the unseen creatures who tower over us omnisciently and laugh. For my people blundering and groping and floundering in the dark churches and schools and clubs and societies, associations and councils and committees and conventions, distressed and disturbed and deceived and devoured by money-hungry, glory-craving leeches, preyed on by facile force of state and fad and novelty, by false prophet and holy believer. For my people, standing, staring, trying to fashion a better way from confusion, from hypocrisy and misunderstanding, trying to fashion a world that will hold all the people, all the faces, all the Adams and Eves and their countless generations. Let a new earth rise. Let another world be born. Let a bloody peace be written in the sky. Let a second generation full of courage issue forth. Let a people loving freedom come to growth. Let a beauty full of healing and a strength of final clinching be the pulsating in our spirits and our blood. Let the martial songs be written. Let the dirges disappear. Let a race of men now.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Thank you, my brothers and sisters. We are at the top of the hour. We are going to go to our audience. I just want to call your attention that we have other programs on this network that are very inspiring. We have a program called African Perspectives that airs on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. African Perspective every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. Eastern Time to 1 p.m. It airs out of Atlanta, Georgia. That's a good brother who runs an organization called Motherland Media. His name is Brother Oshiemi Adelabu. And so that program is African Perspectives, 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 to 1 a.m. Eastern Time. And I'm pretty sure you will enjoy his dialogue and his talk, wonderful guests sometimes, and just a lot of his dynamic commentary, you know, obviously from a very conscious brother. We appreciate him. And then on Friday from 8 to 10, we have Time for an Awakening with the owner and the promoter of the Time for Awakening Network, Brother Elliot, and his co-host, Brother Richard, every Friday from 8 to 10. And then on Sundays from 7 to 10 Eastern Time, all Eastern Time, and they are airing out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And their name of their program is Time for an Awakening, and we appreciate them. And then the Black Reality Think Tank has three other programs. As you know, this program comes on every Tuesday from 7 to 9. And then on Thursday, we have a group of young millennial ladies who are going to come on, talk about women, relationships, babies, family, all of those things that are very important to the social life of our folk. And that program is going to air from 6 to 8 o'clock every Thursday evening right here on Time for an Awakening. And then we are going to on Saturday from 3 until 5, Dynamic Program, that's our weekend edition. Ms. LaWanda Chambers and Ms. Leola Williams host that program. They talk about a plethora of things. They get into different kinds of subjects and ideas and thoughts. They address issues, and they do it from a female perspective, obviously, because they are women, but also they are psychotherapists, and they run clinics, and they see people who come to them traumatized. And so they kind of have a viewpoint that maybe many of us don't have, because we are not obviously into that field. So we really appreciate them. They come on and they provide us the programming and information around those kind of ideas. That's every Saturday from 3 to 5, right here on Central Time, Time for an Awakening. And then at right after that, from 6 to 8, Let the Elders Speak, the Sankofa Council, which is located in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is headed by Brother Alfonso Watkins, airs from 6 to 8. Dynamic discussion, very powerful, thought-provoking. Last week they talked about infant mortality and some of that. He had Dr. Jenny James on, who is a specialist that has brought over 2,000 babies into the world. And she wants to. She's concerned that that next generation is strong. So we have that program, and so that is the maker. And then there are others as well too. But you can go to www.timeforanawakening.com website, www.timeforanawakening.com website, and look at all of the programs. They're all archived. Go into the podcast portal, pull down, look for the Black Reality Think Tank, African Perspectives, Time for an Awakening, and go back and listen to any of the programs that have aired. So we definitely invite you to do that. Very happy to be a part of this system, this network, and obviously it would not be possible if it was not for you. So with that, I want to say to all of you, I'm going to open your mics. And I need to just make sure I ask each of you, all background noise is very distracting, and I've had to quite often sometimes turn your mic off. So, because again, this is rebroadcast, and when you hear it on a rebroadcast, you begin to understand why I might say that, because it can kill a thought and so forth. So I'm going to open it all. I want a free-for-all discussion. I'm going to start off with my good brother, Brother Herbie White. And then I'm going to move up to Brother Bruce Bridges and ask them what he thinks about the Byron Allen article. First of all, had he read it? Have you read it? If not, what do you think about somebody that just spent $1 million to do something like that? How do you see that? So, Brother White, what do you think? Did you read that article? Did you see it?
Yeah, good evening, Dr. Rogers.
Good evening.
No, I haven't had the opportunity to read it. I didn't even know that the article existed.
Okay. Yeah, it was in Monday's Wall Street Journal, and like I said, I researched the cost of that ad.
I'm gonna see if I can pull it up online.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's online. It's a powerful exposition for me, at least for me it was.
Yeah.
But what do you think about the idea of doing something like that? I mean, at this point, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to express ourselves and try to release some of this anger. What do you think about that as a former? Again, ladies and gentlemen, I can hear you in the background. Brother Herbert, hold on just a minute. Please remember, brothers and sisters, your microphones are open. I can hear you. Least bit of movement can be picked up. It's real sensitive kind of stuff. So please be mindful of that. Thank you. Uh-huh. Okay, Brother White.
Yeah, one of our great ancestors, the author and historian Shashi McIntyre, she said, if I'm not what you say I am, then what are you?
Okay.
If I'm not what you say I am, if I'm not a nigger, if I'm not a idiot, if I'm not backwards, if I'm not a buffoon, if I'm not a clown, then what are you? Why did you have to call me those names and make me something that I wasn't? It was basically to make yourself look like something that you know that you're not.
All right.
And so that's the kind of thing that we're dealing with, that white people, it's really white inferiority that we're dealing with.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what makes that psychopathic behavior, because they have to constantly, prove that they are something, and to do that, they have to break black people or all other people down.
Right.
So, like, any black person that becomes great has to deal with that, like a Muhammad Ali. Yeah. They had to bring him down, like a Michael Jackson, mm-hmm. like a Mike Tyson, mm-hmm. like a Barry Bonds. You know, he broke the great Babe Ruth record, so they had to make him into a dope addict, although he never tested positive for drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So they're constantly trying to keep the truth buried, because the truth will expose them.
Yes, it will.
The truth will expose them. From what I understand and what I've read, the value of slavery economically to this country was more valuable than all the other assets put together.
Mm-hmm.
The value that slavery provided economically for this country was more valuable than all the other assets that this country had put together.
That's true.
If that's the case, if America is a corporation, then we the major stockholders.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got statues to the founding fathers, the statues should be statues of us. And that's why there can't be a real examination of American history.
Right.
When black people in the 60s and 70s wanted black studies, they didn't need black studies. They just needed honest American history. and that would have been black
that's
studies.
That's true. That is black. That's exactly right.
They cannot. Their position will not hold up under examination. So they constantly have to do other things to you to divert your focus.
Mm-hmm.
From everything else. And so they have to maintain a harsh reality for black people or non-white people all over the world.
That's right.
Otherwise, you know, it wasn't less than 100 years ago the British people could say the sun never sets on the British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Now England can't even hardly feed itself. They couldn't maintain the lie.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Thank you, Brother White. Appreciate that. I want to ask Dr. Bridges, Bruce Bridges, who is the author of a powerful book called Recapturing the African Mind. I want to ask you a specific question. Welcome you first to the Black Reality Think Tank. Give your input or maybe starting with this Byron Allen article. But I want to ask something specific I'd like you to answer first. And I'm doing so because you are a geographer. That is your area of expertise, with geography. Plus, on top of that, you were a historian, and you read many works, and you've read many books about history. If you ask the Caucasian why they act that way, and what they're doing, if you read some of their material, as you read, if you read books like Hitler's Mein Kampf, the one American Negro Slavery, and looked at some of those other slave apologists, the reason they say they act like that is because they are superior to everybody else. As Charles Darwin put it, it's survival of the fittest. We are the strongest, and the strong will survive. So that's why we act that way. And everybody else is stupid and ignorant. But from your perspective, African nationalist perspective, and as a historian, where do you think white folk got that evilness and that behavior from that you see being played out in Minnesota, New York, and all over the rest of this country? What would you say to that? Could you answer that for me first, and then you can get into your own commentary?
All right, I would before I take it right to historical geographical explanation.
Right.
Elijah Muhammad said many years ago that the white man is a devil, and it is his very nature to do the kinds of things that he's doing. I want to just lay that out.
Okay.
But now he says it's in his very nature. But now, nature, which Elijah Muhammad didn't go into, nature is created or produced by something you talked about earlier, and that is environmental factors. Mm-hmm. There was a time period in history called the Pleistocene Epoch, okay. And I used to teach on this, and that's spelled... And I like just like do this because you never know who's listening.
Now that's why I asked you. I knew you would have that information.
Right. The Pleistocene Epoch. And that Pleistocene is spelled Pleistocene. Pleistocene. Epoch. Epoch. Or epoch. Which is a time period in history. Now, the Pleistocene Epoch is a period, Dr. Rogers, in which there were more changes that had ever taken place in the whole surface of the Earth in terms of nature and environment. The Pleistocene Epoch is where various animals, plants, mammals, amphibian, all life form on the earth were or was produced. As an example, it was during the Pleistocene Epoch when these changes took place during the ice ages. You had cold climatic conditions where you had certain animals that were produced in cold climates, such as, if we use just a simple example, you take a look at the bunny rabbit in cold climates or the polar bear in a cold climate. But then if you go into a warm climate where changes were taking place, you'd find birds like the falcon, or in a cold climate you'd find its counterpart, which is the penguin. The counterpart to that rabbit would be the jackrabbit out in arid climates, warm climates. And when you look at the jackrabbit, his nature and his actual physical form is different from the bunny rabbit. Just use that as an example. The jackrabbit, which was created and emerged from a warm climatic environment, has long legs with very little hair. And there's a reason for that. The long legs were created because food was only to be found every now and then in hot, arid environment. So those legs developed so that he could move from place to place to find food. His hair was very short because of the heat in an arid climate. But you found the exact opposite of the bunny rabbit in a cold climate. It's short, shocky, close to the ground, and a lot of hair. The white man, as Michael Bradley talked about, was not exempt from those climatic conditions. The white man was produced in that cold, as John Henry Clark says, icebox of Europe. No food, no shelter except the caves. Cold, brutal wind, rain, hail, ice. Hair grew all out over his body to protect him from the environment in the same way that the hair grew out on the little bunny rabbit to protect him, or the same way that the blubber was created on the penguin so that he could survive in his polar or Arctic environment, and the same thing with the bear. Right. You see, so his nature then, as you said earlier, you're absolutely correct, was actually to survive and to destroy and to kill anything that was in his way or kept him from his survival. He would kill another of his own species. He would kill his fellow man. He would kill his animal, the wolf, the other animals that he needed to survive. His whole instinct was survival. Food, clothing, and shelter. Food, of course, being the most basic, and the food he got by any means necessary. And over many, many years, that whole nature developed and went through certain processes in that climate and caused him to become the way that he became. Mm-hmm. And so when he roared out the hills and cave sides of Europe in the 14th century and began to conquer and colonize other people of the earth, then he was the same man who had developed in the cold, harsh climates of Europe. Michael Bradley talks about the Iceman inheritance.
Sure did. Yep.
You see?
That's right.
Did. So that's what you had in the 14th and 15th century when he roared out of Europe and began to conquer and colonize all other people of the earth. He was looking for food, which you could not hardly find in England and France and Germany and Spain and Portugal and Scotland. Mm-hmm. You can't find the same because of the climatic conditions, going mm-hmm. back again to the geography and the climate. Mm-hmm. And this is why from India he took jute, manganese, and rubber, which is along the hot belt of the earth. India is mm-hmm. the Dravidian civilization, which was inhabited by black people many, many years ago, as Drusilla Houston talks about in her book, The Wonderful Ethiopian. She talks about that black belt in right. India down near the Himalaya Mountains, where the Dravidians originated in southern India. Those people were there. So the European went and he took jute, manganese, and rubber. He went to China, took silk and gunpowder. He raped Africa of her diamonds and her gold, then went over to the Mideast, Arabia, and took barrels of oil untold, raping and robbing everything in his path. And that's why the whole black world has tasted of the white man's wrath everywhere he's gone. And he did that because he had nothing in the hills and cave sides of Europe, and he also had nothing up in Scandinavia, up in Finland and Denmark and Norway, in those cold Scandinavian climates up near the North Pole, near the Arctic regions of the earth. There was nothing to be found there in terms of growth and development and food growing and that kind of thing because of the environment. The same thing over in England.
Right.
So therefore, when you read their tales and their stories, you read about England and they start talking about the Victorian age. They're going to talk about the fact that they took opium into China after starting the plantations to grow the opium in India, and then they sold the opium to the Chinese, and then opium became a problem in England.
That's
among
right.
her own people, and they had opium dens. But the opium was there in India that they created the opium fields and then sold it to make money in China and to get the silk from China.
Very
and
good.
So then they
Very
had
good.
Silk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You see, and then they came over into this part of the world, so-called New World, and of course they got the sugar
right.
and took the sugar into India, and they got the tea out of China into India, and then you got people in Ghana now having afternoon teas because Ghana was colonized by the British, but it's a British product that was stolen for the British elite
right.
to build up British society, and that's how they became where they are now. When you look at the statues that are coming down now, they were talking. I heard on the news today they were talking about Cecil Rhodes and Cecil Rhodes the statue. How it really started in Africa when they said Cecil Rhodes must go, and they tore down the statue of Cecil
right.
Rhodes in Africa
yep.
some years back.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at Cecil Rhodes. He went into what at that time was called Northern and Southern, it was Zimbabwe,
mm-hmm.
of course changed into Rhodesia, and got the diamonds there and made the money from the diamonds. He and the other Europeans, Bonnie Bonatto and some of the other European adventurers and entrepreneurs went there, gangsters and thieves, took that money and endowed Oxford University, and that's how Oxford University became what it is today, an endowment of your and my diamonds
right.
from Zimbabwe.
That's right.
And even the queen has in her scepter, she has the biggest diamond called the Kulian diamond, which came out of South Africa
on
her scepter and in her
that's right.
crown
that's
and the
right.
staff that she carries.
Let me cut you off just a second, Brother Bridget, because I want to get some open more
off,
lines.
You asked me a question, so I you
But no, and you did. You answered that just the way I needed, and obviously, in conclusion of what you did and what you provided in that expose, is this is the Nazi spirit that we are talking about. And that didn't begin with Hitler. Hitler did not begin. He just simply labeled it. But the spirit that we are seeing, as Dr. Bridges says, comes out of that struggle for environment. And it's not a basis of superiority. It's not a basis that you're stronger and smarter than anybody else. It's the easy way. If you're going to live, you got to find some way to do it. And you figure that the best way to do it is to be evil and to create evilness on other people. And so when Charles Darwin got into that boat and went out, as Dr. Bridges said, and he watched frogs eat grasshoppers, and he watched all kind of different things take place in nature, he simply
right.
says that it's the survival of the fittest. That obviously the frog is stronger than the grasshopper, so therefore he can eat him. He has a right to eat him.
And, since you mentioned it, too, it even goes back to what Gerald Massey in his 6-volume set, Natural Genesis in 2 volumes, Book of Beginnings in 2 volumes, and also Ancient Egypt, Light of the World in 2 volumes. In Natural Genesis, which I was reading some in last week, he talks about how the early, and he calls them the pre-monumental Africans before
right.
the great monument in Ancient Egypt. He talks about the fact that in order to do that building, they studied nature. So everything
right.
that we see occurring
right.
is just an occurrence or the results, I should say, of what happened in nature.
Right.
So in the same way that the Caucasian European man was developing physically, the strong muscles and physical body which he had to have to survive, his mind was also going through certain changes and processes and certain realms of development at
right.
the same time. So
exactly.
he wasn't just developing on a physical level, but he also was being created on a mental level. And when it came to spirituality, he had none of that.
Right. So through that experience of Europeans.
Exactly.
That becomes a lesson. That's a textbook for them to begin to employ that world. They know what food and the lack of food can do. So that's why they give you food stamps because they don't want you starving. Because if you starve, you're going to kill somebody to get you some food. So right. Therefore, they give you farm. That's why they gave you a stimulus check to shut you up and sit you down, because the frustration of not being able to work, provide food, some of the other struggles in nature that you were going to encounter, it need to be softened into a blow. That's why they gave black folk AFDC and W-2 to shut them up. And calm them down, because they know in nature, if you have to resort to nature, then you got a different another person. Let me go. Thank you so much, Dr. Bridges. Let me go to a sister.
I hope I answered the question
quickly. Go right ahead.
I was saying, I hope I answered your question.
Oh no, you did. Oh no, that was right on. That's what I wanted to hear, because I wanted to explain the Nazi spirit. That's long before Hitler, you know, so don't stop thinking of that. So what you're seeing now is a return to nature that these folks are doing. Their existence is being threatened again. And so what they're going to do is start killing in order to make sure that they eat, you know, and some of the things. That's what we'll witness. Ms. Chambers. Ms. Chambers is does the Saturday program from 3 to 5, I'm sorry, Eastern Time, on the weekend edition. What thoughts you have, Ms. Chambers? You've been doing some fantastic presentations on your program. What's some of the things that you see? Ms. Chambers, are you there? All right, I see a picture there, but she's that. Ms. Ayan. Ms. Ayan, are you there?
Yes, greetings. Can you hear me?
Yes, greetings. How are you?
Okay, you caught me right when I put something in my mouth for you. give me a second. Okay. So hello?
Sorry, yes. I can't get to the phone right now.
I'm here.
Okay. So I do appreciate the history lesson. It's so important to be informed. I love what you were saying, Doc. Dr. Rogers, in the very beginning, about the revolutionary spirit,
right?
That you were breaking down. Hello.
Yeah, we hear you. Here, I can hear you.
Yeah, I'm just hearing different noises.
Well, yeah, you got the microphones are all open, so that's why.
Okay. Yeah, I get it. Okay, so I just want to say this. I'm really pissed. I'm very angry. Mm-hmm. About the blatant killings that are going on. Mm-hmm. And what I see is what white neo-Nazis have been telling us for the longest, that they want a race war. They want to start a race war.
Mm-hmm.
And so they keep killing us to get us into that war mode. And interestingly enough, we're not fighting back. We haven't organized to engage in war.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking about that, and I'm thinking about how our young people see us as cowards. Mm-hmm. And when they carry signs that say, you know, and some of them in a protest saying that we are not our ancestors, we fight back. Unfortunately, they don't understand the history of our struggle and our fight and that we did fight back. And whenever we fight back, they make sure they kill, you know, another 100 or 1,000 of us.
Right.
So I think we've not been effective at teaching our people, at least after Malcolm was assassinated, we haven't been effective enough at teaching our people that we are dealing with a very violent being.
That's right.
You know, frankly, I don't care if they came, wherever they came from, space, cold climate, and that's not saying anything negative about the history that was just broken down, because that's very important.
Right.
But personally, how I'm feeling right now, I don't care where they came from. I wish they would go back.
Mm-hmm.
I think they came from hell, and I think they need to go back to hell. The way way that they're killing our men in the street, just like dogs, not mm-hmm. even dogs, because they're in love with dogs. So we would get arrested if we killed dogs like that
mm-hmm.
immediately. Excuse me. And so I want to focus on us. And our mentality, because when you're terrorized and attacked like we have been for 400 years,
right.
A lot of the physical torture, enslavement, lynching, and all of that really does it does violence to the mind.
Yes, it does.
And so a lot of this is also, in addition to the physical attacks and invasions and whatnot, we're dealing with psychological warfare. And I heard some things that I'm listening to a lot of people talk, just like you were talking about earlier. Oprah Winfrey, you know, she came out of mammyism and decided to do something on what's going on, you know, in terms of the lynching of black men. And everybody's talking now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I'm hearing these words that bother me. I'm hearing, you know, we still have to dream and we still have to hope. Excuse me. And then I'm hearing the younger people saying we have to imagine, you know, a world of justice and whatnot. How long are we going to dream and hope?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Until we all get killed off? How long are we going to have what's sounding to me like an immature mindset? Children dream and hope and imagine. Dr. Wilson talked about, you know, some of the lingo that black men use, like baby and crib and whatnot, and how that's, you know, indicative of a an infantile mindset.
Right, right.
Well,
right.
I think we've grown a little bit, but we're in a teenage mindset where we're dreaming and hoping. That's not going to produce anything for you. That's not going to help you to fight. Okay, dream and hope, but can you fight?
That's why I'm having this discussion.
It doesn't have to be mean weaponry. Mentally, can you fight?
That's why I'm having this discussion.
Can you devise strategies so that we can begin to win?
Exactly. Exactly. Because the spirit we've been talking about is not going away. It's not going to go away like that. It's not. They're going to be more of that. So let's rule that out. You're not going to stop that. But like you said, you're not going to stop the behavior from these Europeans that we see. You're not going to stop that.
Exactly. That's why I'm talking about us, because we've got to make the changes that are necessary within us.
Right.
We are suffering from trauma.
Right.
Traumatized people are not going to do something that works.
No.
Because trauma paralyzes you and is keeping us in that teenage state of mind where we're hoping and dreaming.
Right.
So Obama helped promote that hope. I hated it when he was doing it. Hope, hope, hope. So nobody held them accountable. Nobody fought for anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, not much. I can't say nobody, but we were not effective. So we're not being effective because of what we've been internalized. I'm going to end up saying this. You know, you were talking about peace earlier. Black folk, we got to face reality. We're dealing with the race of people who do not want peace.
They don't understand it.
You want it.
They don't know what peace is.
They don't want it.
Right.
You're dealing with people that the Africans called hunters of men.
Right.
Look at their television shows. Look at their movies.
Right.
Violence all over the place.
Exactly.
Cartoons. Violence all over the place. We're dealing with the violent people.
Yes.
And so that's a reality we have to face. And the way to fix it is, for me, is to get out.
Right.
They put Hitler as the man of the year on Time magazine. I don't know what year it was, Dr. Rogers, you may remember.
I remember. Uh-huh.
You know, they idolized Hitler. You talk about what is the name of the show, Nazism?
Yeah.
Or Nazification?
Yep. And that's the mentality that's resurfaced.
Hitler is a great ancestor. They love him.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So what I'm saying is we got to teach our children, the young people that are fighting in the streets right now, we got to teach them what they're dealing with. The white man is the devil. Not all of them. I have white friends that are calling me saying, what can we do?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm giving them some answers that they don't like. They need to fight for reparations if that's, you know, for black folk. That's mm-hmm. one thing they can do.
Right. Good.
Pull all the attorneys together, you know, and strategize also. So let's please look at reality. Stop dreaming and hoping and the faith and then praying and find effective ways to fight.
Because
I'm sick of this.
That's what we're talking about. And that's why we wanted to have this discussion, because we wanted it, and I wanted to use Nazism as an example of trying to have folk understand what you're dealing with when you try to figure out how could somebody do what was done to some of these folk. And it's because you're dealing with another kind of a spirit. And if you go back and look in history, you know, and that's why history is a beautiful discipline for the sake of understanding, you can see that. It's there. It's written out. We're not just talking from our hips. We're talking from history. That was done. Hitler was going to wipe out the whole Jewish nation, just like the British did in Australia. They went down in Australia and killed every man, woman, and child who were a part of that culture down in that western part of Australia. That's right. They wiped them all out. The Tasmanian, they wiped them all out. And they
Let me finish.
I'll come back to you. And they wiped them out. They did the same thing in Nazi Germany, wiped them all out. They wanted to wipe out all of the Jews. And then they came to America to tie right in. And actually, if you go back and you look in history, Hitler and his SSS group and all that intellectual stuff he had going on, they came to America and studied American slavery as a means of implementing Nazi Germany. They used the tactics of slavery, which was here long before the Nazis ever existed. And they used some of those tactics to do that. Now, what were you saying?
I was just going to say that right now they're still trying to get into Venezuela and take down the president there and put in Guaido, who they want, violently.
Right. So that's what we're dealing with.
They never get enough. They never get enough violence. They never get enough resources. And, again, our solution is to get out because we're in a sociopathic America.
Right. And that's what you're dealing with. So one of the things when your children encounter that behavior in an automobile one night about 11 o'clock at night, right, and he gets pulled over about some of these folks that we're talking about, there's not going to be any rationalization process here. They're not going to rationalize. That's not their nature. They see an enemy. They hate their enemies, and they will annihilate them before they do anything else. And that's what we're seeing. Let me go over to 414-399. Any comments, caller?
No, Baba, I'm just listening, man. Peace and blessings to you.
Peace and blessings to you, my brother. Okay. Just saw the number. Brother Timothy, Yaku, is that what Honorable Elijah Muhammad was talking about? You're a member of the Nation of Islam. You've been taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You've been taught by Minister Farrakhan. Is this Yaku?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. But, sir, can I ask you two things before we get into that? I'd like to know that brother's name at birth, that Panther. What's his name at birth? What was his name at birth? The Black Panther?
Oh, the brother ancestral profile? Kuwazi Balogun. That was
his name at birth?
Oh, his name at birth was David Weems. David Weems. David Weems. W-E-E-M-S.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
And you know what, brother? When I can stay up, I try to look at Byron Allen. You can't judge him. I discover that was a great expose.
I love it. I think everybody should, if you get a chance, go and find this. It was in Monday's Wall Street Journal. I'm sure it's online.
Uh-huh. But I'm gonna say this to you, sir, that a lot of people have to understand, sir, being taught by a lot of brothers in the Nation of Islam, that Malcolm X was the mouthpiece of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He was articulate enough. He had great organizing skills. But a lot of things that the messenger could have taught, he died with, especially with the arguments and problems that happened at the end of the Nation of Islam. Unfortunately, he came about his death. The messenger was told by Muhammad to meet for 107 books. I'm not taking away anything from anybody. I'm just telling you what I was taught.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were George Massey's books. and Godfrey Higgins and things of that nature. But when Alice Haley did the autobiography of Malcolm X, he does informal autobiographical work.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to do it in Elijah Muhammad first. Elijah Muhammad said, I got a student that I want you to do it on. And that's how Malcolm, that's how that book was done on Malcolm X. People didn't know that, that he did, he was going to do it on Elijah Muhammad.
Okay.
The other thing was that, let me tell you about the other thing about The Messenger, is that, oh, wow, I guess I forgot that part. But let's get into this. The Messenger talked about gravitation, and I thought he did the best he could do to explain people the origin of the white man. He even used Yaku as the term. But The Messenger understood, he talked about gravitation. And when he talked about gravitation, he was saying white people are actually us, and they're the worst part of us.
All right,
from being in the hell of the wilderness, from being in the hell of the wilderness of North America, and going up in the caves, and the ice age and the glacier period took away their melanin, it took away their thought processes, and they became a people that were unalike. And like you said, survival skills were important for them, not having food, being bottled up in the cold. All those are, like you said, the Germanic spirit. You know, you have the Angles, the Saxons, the Jukes. All those people are not, are from us, but because they're grafted, they have, they in their mind are looking for preservation to live. Mm. Now, to the, right, and here's the thing. The thing is that I've been taught in the nation that when they had the opportunity to, if they would have made it right away with black people immediately, they could have been saved. But as you see, they're out of the realm of being human. And some people say, that's not, are you crazy? No. Look how black people act now. Well, listen, we didn't always act like this. And we've been raised under a foster father. And we could go on the Darwin's theory. You put it all together.
Right.
The sister did. Dr. Bridges did. And I guess I'm just adding to the story because we have the same narrative. You know, we have the same narrative. And that surviving under a man who doesn't have the knowledge of himself,
right,
and is living the life of a beast, we have taken on these characteristics.
Right.
And the thing is, like you said, we've been captive and been taken out of our nature. And how, the thing is, Dr. Rogers, we talk about Africa all the time. We need those resources. But how, and I'll go back to our motherland, but how do we get out of it?
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, how do we release ourselves from being captive and getting knowledge of ourselves when we have an enemy that's our open enemy constantly stepping on our necks?
That's what we
add that.
That's why we're here tonight, talk about some of those ideas. Not, you can't walk away here with the answer, but we can surely open up some doors that can get some of these creative brothers and sisters out here to create some agendas and programs that can do it. You're right. Just like our ancestor did it. 414-573, any comments you'd like to make?
Hey, Dr. Rogers, it's all been very interesting.
Good, thank you.
Thank you, and all the other contributors to tonight's conversation. Yeah, I feel like what the sister was saying was like so right on, is that we are in this war. We're fighting against that's the type of people, I say, psychotic folks, and yet, you know, we're just trying to have peace in our lives, so to speak. We're just trying to maintain and just, you know, create that harmony, that balance.
Mm-hmm.
And then the threat is very scary, you know, there's that fear factor that we're facing. We want to protect our families, we want to protect ourselves. And so the ideal of, okay, it's time to fight. Where's our weapons? Where's our strategy? You know, where are our resources to fight? And, you know, who's going to join the army? So that's a lot of questions to raise.
That's right. A lot of questions.
On mind. Like, how are we going to effectively deal with this? And everybody has to be, in a sense, on one page. And I don't think I don't think we're all on, we're not all there. We're not on that one page to prepare ourselves for, you know. I mean, how many people got out and protested? How many people did banners? How many people made a monetary contribution? What did we do while all this is going on to try to make even a difference or to try to come to the aid of some of the protesters? So that's where I'm at right now.
That's good. Thank you so much. Ms. Chambers, are you there? I've called on you before, but you didn't answer. Ms. Chambers, are you just listening? Yeah, I guess you may be just listening. Okay. 919-477, comments, or are you just listening?
I have a comment.
Okay, sure, go right ahead.
First of all, I want to speak on police brutality against our black brothers and sisters.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
First of all, I've noticed that they're always speaking about the police officers and that they need to be taught and they need to put out more resources to have programs to, I guess, to help them understand more about what they're supposed to be doing, if I can put it that way. But what I want to say is I don't think racism can be taught.
Mm-hmm. You don't think racism is going to be what? Say it again.
I don't think that racism can be taught.
Oh, okay.
I don't think there's no class that they can have to teach people not to be a racist.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is this. I don't think they'll ever get rid of it. I think it will always be in the police force because I think it's a part of a person, just like a child's development. You know, first they learn how to crawl, and then they walk, and then they talk. And if you are born into a racist environment, and it stays with you. Right. And there are a lot of kids born in racist environments, and they grow up, and you know what, they kind of hide it. But it's still there.
Still there, right.
And they actually grow up in segregated environments. Because if you really don't want to connect with a black person, you don't have to.
Right.
You can grow up in a segregated environment. You can go to a segregated school. And in some instances, a segregated college.
Mm-hmm.
You might have 3 or 4 blacks there, but overall it's segregated. And then as you move on through life, you might get a job where you have to, you know, come in contact with more black people than you normally would, but you still got that racist, hidden racism inside of you.
That's right.
So if you are fortunate enough to get on the police force and you already got a hatred against blacks, well, you know, that's your pie job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the first thing you're going to do is to do what you feel that you should do.
And get away
if
with
you
it.
You stop them, you don't like them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And you know you can do whatever you want to do and get away with it. Because you're a police officer, you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's no way that nobody that really anti-black that joined the police force, I don't think that there's no way that no training can help them erase that. That's within.
Right.
That has to be changed. That's a spiritual change that has to be taking place.
That's right. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there has to be a divine intervention.
Okay.
All the handbooks and videos or whatever, it can't be taught.
Right.
It can't be taught. That's just like evil.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's something that has to be fought.
Right.
There's no pills or nothing you can take to get rid of evilness.
Okay.
That's something that has to be fought.
Right.
And that brutality stuff, that's going to take a divine intervention.
Yeah, it is. Okay, let me...
I don't know what's going
to... hate to cut you off, Justine. I got 3 minutes left. I wanted to see if this 414-429 caller, do you have something to say? Or are you just listening? Okay, just listening. Well, you know, as usual, the time moves fast, and we are at the end. This has been wonderful. I appreciate all of you. Basically, there was a good way, Sister Ann, to help us conclude this discussion. You're right. The permanency of this mentality is real. Dr. Derek Bell, who was the professor, a law professor from Harvard, wrote a book called Faces at the Bottom of the Well. And in that book, he talks about the permanency of racism. And he laid out, and that was toward the last years of his professorship, but he laid out the agenda exactly why he felt that this would never go away. And a lot of what you just said are some of the same kinds of reasons and what we've been talking. We've been talking about Nazism, and the Nazification of America has been that way since 1619. It has not. It did not begin with Adolf Hitler. I think that's the closing thought that I wanted to leave with you. So therefore, something that's been in the system that long is not going to go away. So what we have to do is find methods of survival to make sure that our children don't continuously fall victim to this kind of stuff. We thank all of you for being here. Don't forget to tune in on Saturday for our weekend edition at 3:00 with Ms. LaWanda Chambers and Ms. Leola Williams, and then again at 6:00 with Brother Alfonso Watkins and the Elders Council of Milwaukee Dynamic. And then next Thursday, the sisters hopefully will be ready to come on. I'm William Rogers. I'm your host. Thank you. Have a wonderful, wonderful week.
This is a mean old world to live in, all by yourself. This is a mean old world to live in, all by yourself. This is a mean world to be alone without someone to call your own. This is a mean old world to try and live in all by yourself. I wish I had someone who'd love me too.